Black Buffalo Zero products are intended for adults age 21 and older who are consumers of comparable products. If you're an adult age 21 and older who dips, I want to tell you about Black Buffalo Zero pouches. What are they made of? Pretty simple. Cured edible green leaves. Food-grade ingredients. Most importantly, there's no nicotine or tobacco. All proudly made here in the U.S. So if you're 21 and older and want to learn more about Black Buffalo Zero, head over to blackbuffalozero.com to learn more. You can buy their pouch online, ship directly to most states. Black Buffalo Zero, zero nicotine, zero tobacco, 100% ritual.
Streaming has gotten way too complicated, but you can hack the system with Prime Video. It has everything in one app with one password. See Roadhouse, Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League all included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. Prime Video. It's all your favorite content in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 Podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them, because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi, let's talk about Pro Plan Sport. Pro Plan Sport is advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours. So wherever your next journey together takes you, start it off right with the high-performance fuel your dog needs to keep pushing you every step of the way. Pro Plan Sport. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com.
Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at FoxSportsRadio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Wednesday. We are live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Preseason games ready to roll. Joy Taylor is joining me on a lively show today. Nick Wright shows up later in the hour, or next hour, I should say, 1 hour from now. Joy, how are you?
I'm doing great. Football season is here. I'm excited. There are some really interesting stories for this season to watch.
Yes. And it's been an unusually slow July and early August. There's not a lot of controversy. We were talking about this yesterday. Athletes make more money. They've got more handlers. I think they're smarter. They make fewer mistakes. And so we haven't had major controversies except one with Deshaun Watson. So an independent arbiter came out, Sue Robinson, and said, give Deshaun Watson 6 games. Roger Goodell said, that's not enough. As I had said, I would double it, minimum, 6 for the preponderance of evidence and 6 for lying about it. Roger Goodell talked yesterday. They are now pushing for a 1-year suspension, and here's the commish.
We've seen the evidence. She was very clear about the evidence. She reinforced the evidence that there was multiple violations here, and they were egregious, and it was predatory behavior. Those are things that we felt, we always felt were really important for us to address in a way that's responsible.
If I own the Cleveland Browns, I'd take my lumps, take the suspension, and move on. But that's my personality. I'm somebody, if I have issues in my life, I clean them off the table. My wife and I talk about this all the time. There's no reason to create anxiety for multiple people and the kids and the family. Make a mistake. We all do. Own up to it. Pay it off. Clear it off the table. Whatever you got to do. I am not a big believer of fighting, battling conflict, because I think it starts to deteriorate lots of people beyond yourself. That's what I would do. Now, first of all, this is one of these stories. You either get it or you don't, and I'm not going to argue with the people who don't. Deshaun Watson's a creepy predator. That's the behavior I have seen so far, and he's never been honest about it. So, plus, Cleveland made it worse by rigging his contract, so he makes nothing in the first year. They knew he was going to get suspended by paying him $46 million in year two and only $700,000 in year one. And I've heard people argue, oh, that's a brilliant strategy. And no, it's not. It's actually dumb because it's morally corrupt, and because it's so transparent, you can see it from a mile away. It didn't catch anybody off guard. It just ticked off all the owners who don't like the Haslams to begin with. So if I was Cleveland and I own the team, I just take my lumps, deal with it, and then I know I have Deshaun Watson for the following 5 years after that, and I would crush it. But that's probably what they won't do, because billionaires often don't surround themselves with people that challenge them. And the Haslams have made horrible decisions time and time again. They gave Freddie Kitchens a head coaching job. Nobody would even consider him for a coordinator. He was a position coach. Why did they do that? Because they don't have enough people in their life that would say, what are you doing? A lot of people in power don't want to be challenged. They drafted Johnny Manziel because a guy on the street told him to draft Johnny Manziel. Nobody pushed back in the building. Hell, I saw that one from a mile away. They brought back Hugh Jackson after he was 1-15. He went 0-16, and they brought him back again. So people that don't surround themselves with people that hold them accountable tend to make bad decisions. I had a situation in my life about 3 days ago. Long story, won't get into it. It was an advertiser, and I called four people I trust in my industry and sat down, listened to all of them, and not that it changed the course of where I was going, but I took their advice. The Haslams make bad, bad decisions over and over again with quarterbacks and coaches and Deshaun Watson. So I'm pretty sure they're going to absolutely butcher this. To me, it seems so obvious. The league is going to punish you. They're not going away. You're not popular owners. By guaranteeing the contract, you ticked off all the other owners. So you have no allies in this fight. Deshaun Watson did creepy stuff and predatory stuff, and it's right there. It seems so obvious to me. The franchise has been a mess for most of the last 20 years. What's one more year to get it off the table and eventually appeal or appease the league? But I have no confidence whatsoever the Haslams would do that. Some successful people have done it despite themselves. And the fact that this team made the playoffs and has stumbled into a really sharp young GM is almost unfathomable, because if you look at the last 6 or 7 years, they just make bad decisions. This franchise, and they're not the only one. Chicago makes bad decisions. Houston makes bad decisions. Jacksonville's made bad decisions. The league leader in bad decisions have been the Haslams and the Browns. I would take my lumps. I doubt they will. So, you know, in an act of fairness, that's the only way this could be assessed, is I'm going to say something nice about Aaron Rodgers, because I didn't love him talking about psychedelic drug use. I think if you want to change your life, you could go to a licensed professional, not out in the forest, and take a tea that makes you vomit and poop. But that story has now passed. Aaron Rodgers doesn't really want to play 4 snaps in a preseason game. He thinks it's, well, let's let Aaron describe this.
I don't see any benefit to it. I definitely don't see any benefit to playing 1 series. You know, if we're going to play, we should play. And play a quarter, a couple series, 2 or 3 series. If we're going to just suiting up for 4 plays, to me, is a waste. I think it's kind of a no-win situation to the outside the building. And if somebody gets hurt, oh, I can't believe they played our guys. But if we go out and have a stinker, I can't believe they didn't play them. So I think it's just, you just got to do what's best for the squad.
Aaron doesn't need to play in the preseason. One of the reasons I've always loved the NFL is, and I've said this many times, I'm just not somebody who lives and romanticizes about things in the rearview mirror. I'm a windshield guy, not a rearview mirror guy. And all the products we have, you ever had a product and it's new and improved? And I love that, because a company has a product, and then a company goes, hey, new research shows our audience doesn't love this about our product, and so we're going to offer a new and improved product with some of the same foundational qualities, but we're going to elevate it. So I like new and improved. And one of the reasons I love the NFL is they could put a banner over the league every year, new and improved. They get rid of stuff if it doesn't work. They elevate or adapt or evolve if they can improve it. The NFL is the new and improved league. Baseball struggles with change. Football doesn't do things simply because somebody before them did things. Love that kind of business. So Matt Stafford last year didn't play a single snap in the preseason. Not a snap. How'd he do game one? Perfect against the Chicago Bears. 3 touchdowns and 156 passer rating. Daniel Jones played all sorts of snaps for the New York Giants in the preseason. His first week, he lost by 2 touchdowns, 22 of 37. You can either play or you can't. Okay, in college football, think about this. It's 19, 20, 21-year-olds. They have no preseason. And they're limited on the hours they can actually practice. NFL's not. Bryce Young, Alabama, goes from California to Alabama, first game, 4 touchdowns, no picks, 344 yards. Limited practice, no preseason, 19-year-old quarterback. You're telling me NFL quarterbacks need preseason games? They simply do not. Tom Brady won a Super Bowl in a year in which there was a pandemic. He had no OTAs or exhibition games. In fact, he had to practice on a high school field with a helicopter hovering overhead. Aaron Rodgers, I hear this. Well, he's got new receivers. Yes, so 4 snaps means nothing. The NFL mostly does everything right. They really do. They're the new and improved league. If it was up to me, I would reduce the preseason to 1 game. And I would play undrafted free agents, rookies, borderline guys, guys holding on by a string, and I'd play them for 3.5 hours. And that's what I would do. I think the preseason is about injuries. It looks aesthetically awful with empty seats. There is absolutely no proof that playing in the preseason makes you better. Matt Stafford did not take a single snap and was brilliant with a brand new offense and brand new teammates in week one against the Bears, a team that had a pretty good defense. Daniel Jones played all sorts of snaps. He was awful in week one and lost by 2 touchdowns. This is one of the few things the NFL needs to get right. They went from 4 preseason games to 3. I would reduce it to 1. There's an argument to be made. Scrimmages with other teams, 1 3.5-hour outlet. Every other year you get a home preseason game. By the way, the attendance would probably improve if you only asked people to pay for 1 more game every other year instead of 2 home games a year, which they previously had. So I agree with Aaron Rodgers. Kind of a waste of time. 4 snaps, 10 snaps. Aaron can play. The young wide receivers, it's called practice. You can get better there too.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Stuff gets out when somebody wants it out. So recently, 4 important people with the Lakers met together, according to a story I'm reading. LeBron James, his agent, Rich Paul, who represents LeBron and Anthony Davis. So LeBron, his agent, the head coach, the new head coach, Darvin Ham, and Rob Pelinka, who runs the organization, right? At least basketball operations. Those 4 people met. And there were, the story has 4 or 5 different leaks, according to sources. And listen to what is leaked. That they all agreed on 4 or 5 things. And it's very important in this story that everybody was on board with these 4 things. Constant cohesion. That means playing well with others. Westbrook doesn't. Foster an atmosphere of selflessness. Westbrook is ball-centric, often has a very my best friend is the ball attitude. Players have to play new roles. We know Westbrook has 1 way to play. And the offense runs through AD. According to Chris Haynes, well, AD wasn't at the meeting. I think he would like that. All 4 of those leaked seem like wake-up calls for Westbrook. None of those four, because remember, LeBron's the star. There's only two other stars in the organization, AD and Westbrook, and neither was at the meeting. None of those four sound like a shot at AD. AD does play well with others. He and LeBron's chemistry, Joy and I talked about this, like the second game together, it was great. They want the offense to run through Anthony Davis. He wasn't at the meeting. It didn't say Westbrook. He wants players to play new roles. Well, I mean, Anthony Davis plays the five, plays the four. Again, he's always listened and been a very good teammate of LeBron James. And they want to hold everybody accountable to be unselfish. We have never one time said Anthony Davis is selfish. That's not his brand. He's not always as committed as I'd love. Like, if there would have been in this meeting a couple of other boxes, like, you have to come to camp in great shape. Westbrook always does. AD sometimes does. That would have been a shot at AD. Or if you're a big, we need you to stop shooting threes all the time and be a big. That would be a shot at AD. Instead, and Chris Haynes' story, the four or five agreements, according to LeBron, his agent, the president, and the coach, were all things that Westbrook has to work on. Westbrook has a new agent. He wasn't in the meeting. Russ wasn't in the meeting. AD wasn't either. But his agent was. His representation was. So this is a great example of getting something out so Russell Westbrook and his agent see it, and this is what you're going to get in camp. So you better get your mind to understand this is what we're asking of you. Be less selfish. Be willing to play other roles. The offense isn't really going to go through you. And be more cohesive. Like, play defense. Try. Hey, AD, by the way, is an elite defensive player. Westbrook has regressed badly over the last 5 years. So, stuff gets out because somebody wants it out, and it's real clear. LeBron, his agent, the coach, and the GM. Those four or five boxes were all very much aimed at Westbrook. And all simultaneously, things AD already does well. He is cohesive. He is unselfish. He's willing to play multiple positions. And he certainly is going to like the offense run through him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Dan Campbell's interesting. So he had a run as an interim coach in Miami. It didn't work well. I thought his initial press conference in Detroit, he butchered it. Campbell is an incredibly passionate guy, loves his players. I find him infinitely likable, highly emotional. He cries at the drop of a hat. That's a great quality. And his players, similarly, are very emotional because that's kind of the passion he spreads. So this was Jamal Williams from the Lions last night. It's like he's taken a cue from Dan Campbell about, I'm all in, the world doesn't believe in us, and it's become a very, very emotional team.
Jamal Williams, bring it up.
Bring it up, bring it up. I'm going to let y'all know, man, today is the minimum of effort. Do not give up. Do not feel like you're tired. Were you tired? Think of last year and think of that f***ing record. Every time I get tired or I think I can't go no more, I think of that f***ing record. Last year wasn't it. That ain't us. We can make it. Have some heart. I get emotional about this. I'm about to cry because I care about y'all. Do your best. Let's go. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3.
Lions.
It's fun. I mean, it's incredibly, infinitely likable. I tend to think it doesn't win you any games. I think there's four things in the NFL that win you games. Talent, situational excellence, elevated quarterback play, and don't turn the ball over a lot. That's the game. That's the league. Can this give you a lead at half against a bad team? Maybe. But Detroit is unique in that mostly in this league, you and I are going to agree on the really good teams at the top, about 10, and the really bad teams at the bottom. Detroit, when you look at their schedule, they may be the only team in this league I could talk myself into them winning 9 games or 4. They get a real break with their schedule. 7 games on their schedule, they face a team with a fairly shaky quarterback situation where Jared Goff will get better protection and be a better quarterback than who they face. Washington, Seattle, Chicago, the Giants, the Jets, Carolina, Chicago. Those are young quarterbacks, or Carson Wentz, mistake-prone quarterbacks. They also face two talented quarterbacks, both at home and both young, Jalen Hurts and Trevor Lawrence. So they're going to have a quarterback, either experience edge, home field edge, or consistency edge in 9 games. Okay, so that's, you know, 60% of your schedule. Could they go 8-1 in those games? Absolutely. They were very, very competitive last year against good teams often. They just didn't have any depth, and they were terrible defensively. They didn't have a pass rush. They were bad on the back end. Nobody gave up more late touchdowns, it felt like, than Detroit. So they are a very unique team. And that you start looking at this schedule, and if they stayed healthy with their offensive pieces, you could see them winning 9 games. I don't. I see them winning like 6, 7. But I think the emotional stuff makes them easy to root for. I've always felt this league comes down to 4 things. You got to have talent. You got to be excellent situationally because the games are close. You have to have elevated quarterback play off script. And you can't turn the ball over a ton. An occasional pick is okay. Can't fumble it. And if the ball's on the turf, you better pick it up, not them. So easy to root for, rooting for them. We said last year they were the most interesting bad team in the league. My guess is they're a 7-win team. That's it. But I will say this. A friend of mine who gambles for a living thinks they're going to beat Philadelphia. It's the bet of the week in week 1. And he thinks they're going to win 9 games and be a playoff team. So there are people who do this for a living that gamble professionally think they, not my Vikings, the Lions, are the sleeper in the league. Mention Hard Knocks, by the way, is currently streaming on HBO Max, which does a nice job with sports.
They were in a lot of really close games last
year. Oh, absolutely. Not as many as Minnesota, but a lot against good teams. A Rams game was tight. The Ravens game was tight.
It just felt like they needed a little more, like a little more polish, a little more experience, a little more situational, but they were right there. So I don't really feel like that's very far off.
Yeah. So you know what they needed? They needed another draft. They needed 4 starters out of the draft and 3 starters
but
in free agency.
You have to build on something.
Yes.
When you're trying to create a culture, when you're trying to turn around a habitually dysfunctional place, you want to build things. At the beginning, you know it's going to be rocky, but you want to see things that you can build on.
There you go.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The reason professional sports leagues have, like, the NFL's got an NFC or an AFC, and the NBA's got a Western Conference and an Eastern Conference, because you want some geographic symmetry. So all corners of the country are involved. That's why they add playoff teams. You want more people in the game. Baseball right now, the Dodgers and Padres got a lot of money. And then in the middle of the country, St. Louis is viable. And then Atlanta's always viable. Texas, you got the Astros crush it. You got the Mets and the Yankees doing well. Baseball right now has got some really nice symmetry going on where every part of the country, even Seattle's had a good year, the Pacific Northwest, everybody's getting a little loved. You're sprinkling around love. And I think baseball's having a very good year for it. Now, it's a little top heavy, but I think it's been really good for baseball. The arms race, the Padres, Dodgers feel like the Yankees, Red Sox a few years ago. And I thought for a while the sport felt very Northeast dominated. It was like the hot stove league was the Red Sox and Yankees outbidding people. That's not good for the sport. I think baseball's in a really good spot now. College football's not in a good spot. But I saw a story today. I think the transfer portal is really going to help USC, Miami, and Texas. You can get good much faster than you could years ago. That of the top 50 newcomers, according to ESPN, of the top 50 newcomers, that means freshmen or transfer portal additions, USC had 7 of them, and in my argument, the 2 best, Caleb Williams and Jordan Addison. This is currently the problem with college football. Here's what the map of the United States, here's where your top national title contenders are based. A&M, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Bama, LSU, Georgia, Clemson. Now, LSU's in a rebuild. They'll be fine by next year. Nobody in the Pacific Northwest, nobody in the West, nobody in the Northeast, nobody near close enough really to me to get to a Minneapolis or a Detroit. Ideally, if I could pick seven teams to be really viable and the sport I think would flourish, I would pick these seven or eight programs. You'd have a flashy program in the Pacific Northwest. So you cover Idaho, Washington, Montana, Oregon. Oregon. Then I would have the biggest brand out west, and you're in Los Angeles, the biggest city out west, USC. I would have Texas covered, the State School of Texas, UT. I would have Michigan, which is right next to Detroit, and, you know, a 30-minute flight over to Chicago represented. Notre Dame's the biggest independent brand. I would want Penn State to be big because there's a ton of Penn State graduates all over Philadelphia, New York, and Boston. I would then take Georgia because it's closest to Atlanta. It's a growing state. It's a big brand. And Athens, where Georgia's located, is about, I think it's about 90 minutes outside of Atlanta. And then I would have the state of Florida represented by Miami because I think it's the most glamorous brand and it's the biggest media market. Ideally, and I'm not saying Ohio State and other schools, Oklahoma wouldn't be viable. But in a perfect world, to get more discussion, major market and smaller market, you'd have LA touched, Texas, Georgia, Miami, Penn State covers the Northeast, big independent, and then Michigan. That would be perfect college football. And guess what? I'd talk about it more. Talk shows would talk about it more. Networks would dedicate more time to it. So if you love college football, the current map outside of the South is not good for the sport. This is why the NFL and the NBA has got a Western and an Eastern Conference. So I think it's I love the sport, but it's got a massive hole. That's why I am for conference realignment, because what we have is not working and it's getting worse. And so I want Texas, Oklahoma to go to the SEC to make it better. So Georgia's got another tough game and Alabama's got another tough game. And I love that Texas A&M's growing. It gives Alabama another tough game because that's not anti-Alabama. It's pro-competitive balance. And I don't look at necessarily, like baseball people say, well, it's the haves and the have-nots. I look at it and I think you got West Coast representation, Pacific Coast, Northwest representation, Northeast, Cardinals are still good, Braves are always good. You got a team in Texas crushing. That, to me, is when the sports are good. We're all involved.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I involve him as often as I can. Nick Wright, co-host, First Things First. So it's interesting.
Talk about that? Hold on. Can we stay on the college football thing just for a second?
All right.
I know that's not what you brought me on. I just wanted, can we show your map again? Can I ask a question about it?
Okay, go ahead.
Colin's ideal college football map.
Yeah.
Okay. So one request and then one question. The request is you were like, hey, Penn State can represent, you know, the Northeast. Why don't we put a team that's actually in the Northeast, representing the Northeast? Why not replace Penn State with Syracuse? Donovan McNabb, Marvin Harrison, great legacy. Let's just consider it, Colin. But more importantly is this. Okay, that's fine. Why does Notre Dame have to be on there? Because, why don't we kick Notre Dame out and put Ohio State on there?
Because Notre Dame is an independent brand. They're the biggest independent brand ever. And I think there's value. You already have the Big Ten represented. So in my map with Penn State and Michigan, this is not a slight to Ohio State, but Notre Dame has the greatest sidewalk alumni. So I like that.
Yeah, but okay. You know what was another great independent brand? Sears and Roebuck. But it's also something of the past. No young people care about Notre Dame. Like, let's get Ohio State or something else. But otherwise, the reason I wanted to bring it up was I actually think this is great. I think this is, with those minor tweaks, I think you're exactly right that what works against college football is its regionalness, if that's a word.
Yeah.
And if this could happen, it would be great for the sport. I actually think you're right. Now go ahead. I'll stop hijacking your show.
Okay. Well, I thought about something the other day. I talked about it on our podcast before I brought you on. I said, I think you could make an argument that Kevin Durant is the first sports victim of social media. Is that I believe if there's no Twitter, no Instagram, Kevin Durant doesn't hear, and he loves, you know, he's a single guy with a lot of money going home, and he's on that device. He does not hear, you're a sellout, you joined the team you couldn't beat. Like, when he left Westbrook, I got it. He and Westbrook didn't work together, in my opinion. Westbrook's too ball-centric. But there was no reason to leave the Warriors. It was the constant chirping that he was a sellout, and if social media was not here, he would have stayed. But be that as it may, now he's in Brooklyn. Now he has said, according to Shams Charania, that I want Nash gone, Sean Marks gone, or I'm gone. What did you make of that?
I don't think Kevin Durant actually wants those guys fired. I think he just wants to be traded. I think if he wanted Sean Marks and Steve Nash fired, he would have gone to Joe Tsai a month ago when he did the original trade demand, and he would have quietly and privately said, listen, if you don't fire these guys, I'm going to demand a trade. I read this very differently than most. I read this as Kevin Durant asking for something he knew he would not get in order to make it untenable for them to bring him back, because he was starting to get concerned that they might actually bring him back. And so this was him upping the ante to a level that is pretty unprecedented. Like, Colin, it is still mentioned to this day that Magic Johnson got his coach fired. Remember, Magic went to Jerry Buss and said, I'm gonna, you know, I want you to fire the coach or trade me, and they fired the coach the next day. We still remember the Dwight Howard, Stan Van Gundy moment when Stan's like, yeah, Dwight asked for him to be fired. Players flatly demanding a coach getting fired is not unprecedented, but it's extreme. A player demanding a coach and general manager get fired, I have no precedent for it, at least not in modern NBA history. And it's why I think Durant understood Joe Tsai's not going to do it. And they also, I don't believe, can ask Steve Nash to now coach Kevin Durant. I think it was actually a really smart move if his single goal is to get traded. And I think that is his single goal, is to make sure the Nets trade him.
Obviously, Westbrook doesn't work with AD and LeBron or anybody at this point in his career. So Chris Haynes wrote a story with multiple sourcing. And the four things, the four primary things that Rich Paul, LeBron, Rob Pelinka, and Darvin Ham agreed with, the four things, we put them down. They all appear to be shots at Westbrook, which is be less selfish, get along with others, be willing to play a new role, and the offense will run through AD. So AD wasn't at the meeting either. But none of these appear to be a shot at AD, who actually plays very well with others and has played the five and the four. This felt like to me, hey, Westbrook, you and your agent better figure out what we're going to ask of you day one of practice. That's how it landed for me. What say you?
Yeah, I think that's right. But I also think the Lakers are not planning to have Russell Westbrook on the roster. I think that we get very. I think the Lakers are planning for Brooklyn to blow up and for them to get Kyrie Irving and for Russell Westbrook to be gone. And that if that doesn't happen before the season, that will happen during the season. Listen, the Lakers obviously cannot compete for a championship with the roster as it is presently constituted. And there is a chance they are going to have to go into the season with the roster as presently constituted. I would be personally, Colin, absolutely shocked if the Los Angeles Lakers, after the trade deadline, still have Russell Westbrook on the team. So I think they are going to try to, you know, create an offense and a system that could work despite Russ. But listen, I had Russ on my 50 greatest players the last 50 years. He is an all-timer. He also, however, as Colin Cowherd predicted, has not aged well, and this last act of his career is even by the biggest skeptics, I don't know that they could have imagined it going this poorly, and there is no working around it. And I saw in the article that they believe Russ is going to become a more reliable corner three-point shooter. You don't have a $47 million a year defensive liability who you hope can become an adequate corner three-point shooter. With that said, on the right team whose goal is not to win a championship but is to put butts in seats and get from 30 wins to 40 wins, Russ still might have some value. So I think the Lakers, all of their Russell Westbrook plans, Colin, are actually plan C and D, because plan A is Kyrie and plan B is that trade with the Pacers we've been hearing about for years, or for the last year and a half. I think they only are doing this in case they are forced to start the season with Russ.
Well, as a lot of the better quarterbacks in the league are very focused, I saw some video of Mahomes screwing around behind the back stuff, lefty throws, very disturbing. I don't have them winning their division. I do have them making the playoffs. You know, this kind of goofing around stuff. You don't see right Brady now. Doing a lot of that. But be that as it may, or Russell Wilson. I always feel like you do believe that Mahomes doesn't get the respect he deserves. I think he does. I think we love everything about him. But
On this show.
Well, I have
not on this show. I mean, I had to listen. I had to listen for a year. He has to win a big game. You're now. You have the Denver Broncos winning the division. Is that correct?
I do.
Is that correct? Okay, yeah. Colin, I have known you personally for over 6 years.
Yeah.
I feel like I've known you my entire life, but you and I met in person.
Yeah.
In the fall of 2016.
Seems
since
right.
We've known each other.
Yeah.
Do you know how many times the Broncos have beaten the Chiefs?
How many times?
Zero. They haven't beaten them since 2015. They play twice a year, buddy. And now you're giving them the division. So, yeah, I don't think he gets the full respect he deserves. He had a bad 3 weeks of football, and folks were anointing Josh Allen, and they're anointing Justin Herbert, and you have the audacity to say you don't see Russell Wilson doing that type of stuff. Well, you see Russell Wilson doing everything else on his YouTube channel and his TikTok feed, and my God. He's more active on social media than Jake Paul these days, yet somehow Mahomes, who, by the way, let's be fair, what did we see Mahomes working on there? A left-handed pass and a behind-the-back pass. Oh, he would never use that in a game. Except for he beat the Denver Broncos on national television with what on fourth down? A left-handed pass to save the game. And the behind-the-back pass, I've been saying this on First Things First. A little birdie in my ear has told me the behind-the-back pass, not for 30 yards, but more likely at the goal line, is going to make an appearance in a football game this year.
No.
And you think that's crazy, but you've seen Andy Reid, who Colin's in a weird place because he's got Mahomes as like the seventh best quarterback in football, but Andy Reid's going to become the greatest coach of all time thanks to Patrick Mahomes. It's like a weird, he's just locked in a glass case of emotion there. But Andy Reid has had Travis Kelce throw goal line passes. You remember Dontari Poe was 350 pounds. He threw goal line passes. They do a lot of tricky stuff at the goal line. And the little Mahomes rollout with behind the back pass to Isaiah Pacheco, the seventh round pick they love, or Clyde Edwards-Helaire, that's coming. And so, yeah, but I love it. Underdog Chiefs. Nobody believed in us Chiefs. All they've done is host four straight AFC championship games. You're giving the Broncos the division. Okay, yeah. The Russell Wilson, Cortland Sutton combo is going to take over the AFC West. Sure, buddy.
Finally, it is, for years and years, people thought, you know, I was a Patriot homer, and I appreciated Brady's discipline, and he wasn't flashy. I think I'm disciplined. I mean, the guy doesn't drink a beer during the NFL season. I'm not that disciplined. But he has left, and the Patriots now appear to me to be veering off the interstate. Like, it's a mess. Yesterday, I saw Mac Jones at the podium. He looked dejected. They got three defensive coaches coaching offense. They have the most expensive receiving corps in the league and nobody that can separate. What do you make? Have said, I think Miami's going to take a leap. I don't think New England's a playoff team. What do you make of what they're doing to Mac Jones?
Of course not. Well, listen, I think the whole thing is barreling towards a wildly disappointing season. And I agree with you, they're not a playoff team. They have, you said, the most expensive receiving corps. They have also, by a factor of almost 50%, the most expensive tight end room in football. No other team in the league is spending $20 million on their tight ends. The Patriots are spending $30 million on theirs. No, there is one other team in football spending $50 million on their receivers and tight ends combined. The Patriots are spending $70 million on theirs. And you might say it's the most by a mile. The league average is $35 million. And in one school of thought is, well, that's what you do. You have a rookie or quarterback on a rookie contract. You spend all this money to surround him with weapons. It sounds great, but they got the expensive part right. They got the weapons part wrong. Is it possible the Patriots have not only the most expensive group of pass catchers in the league, but the least impressive?
Yes.
Like, what team in the AFC has a less impressive group of pass catchers? The Jaguars overpaid their guys, but Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and Marvin Jones all have one thing in common. All of them would be the Patriots' number one receiving threat by a mile.
Yeah.
So you have all that. You lost not only Josh McDaniels, but he took the whole offensive staff with him. So you have an uncertainty at coaching staff. I think a quarterback who, again, I will remind people, everyone acknowledged Mac Jones was going to be the most pro-ready of the young quarterbacks. So why was he the last one taken in the first round? Because everyone also acknowledged that a guy who was the 160th ranked recruit coming out of high school doesn't have as high of a ceiling as the others. And so could we see that Mac Jones, as opposed to the other young quarterbacks, taking a leap, that he stays about static, but now with a tougher schedule, without Josh McDaniels, where teams are not just selling out to stop the run, that he struggles? Absolutely. Here's a, I threw this bet out at Patriots homer Kevin Wiles on the TV show this morning, Colin. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars will win as many or more games than New England Patriots this year. I believe in the Trevor Lawrence jump. I believe in the coaching of Doug Peterson in that regard. And I think the Patriots have a rude awakening in for them. Their first 4 weeks of the season, they're going to be underdogs in every game except for against Pittsburgh. Their last 6 weeks of the season, they're underdogs in every game except for home against Miami.
Yeah.
I think 7-10 is absolutely the likely outcome for the Patriots.
Well, and also the Jags play in a terribly wonky division where I don't think Tennessee's as good.
Yep.
And I mean, let's be honest about it. Buffalo is so far and away ahead in that division. That's two losses. They can't literally force Belichick, the greatest defensive coach ever, has not forced a punt in the last two games against Josh Allen. And Miami's made massive offensive strides. I don't think that's crazy. I think they're both going to be about 7-8 win teams. I think that's right on. How about that?
Yeah, Buffalo, by the way, another team who's quarterback you've anointed ahead of Mahomes, even though he's never beaten Mahomes in a big spot. Either way, how did it work, Colin, that because Josh Allen doesn't get to get the football, they changed the rules? But 4 years ago, when your beloved Tom Brady wins a coin flip against Patrick Mahomes and Mahomes never gets to touch the football, nobody says a mumbling word. Mahomes should have started his career off with the Super Bowl. Never touched football. Nobody cares. Oh, Josh Allen doesn't get touched football. Here's an idea, Buffalo. You had the lead with 13 seconds left. Keep it. Instead of making them change the rules for you. It's outrageous. Had to get that in. I'm still mad about it.
Nick Wright.
Talk to you later.
Well appointed, as always. He looks fantastic. The summer and the suits are doing him well. Nick Wright.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days. And take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.